Chapter 7. Principles of Pharmacology. Introduction. Administering medications is a serious business. Used appropriately, a medication may alleviate pain and improve a patient's well-being. However, used inappropriately, medication may cause harm and even death. As an EMT, you will be responsible for administering certain medications to patients and helping them to self-administer others. You will ask patients about their medications and allergies, and you will report this information to hospital personnel. This information will provide insight into a patient's medical history and ensure that patients do not receive medications for which they are allergic. To act without understanding how medications work is to place patients in danger. This chapter describes the various forms of medications, the different ways in which they can be administered, and how they work. It then takes a close look at each of the 7 forms of medications you may be asked to administer or help patients to self-administer. It will also explain when it is dangerous to administer these medications. How medications work. Pharmacology is the science of drugs, including their ingredients, preparation, uses, and actions on the body. Although the terms drugs and medications are often used interchangeably, the term drugs may make some people think of narcotics or illegal substances. For this reason, you should use the word medications, especially when interviewing patients and families. In general terms, a medication is a chemical substance that is used to treat or prevent disease or relieve pain. Pharmacodynamics is the process by which a medication works on the body. Receptors are located throughout the body. These are sites on cells where chemicals can bind and cause reactions. When medications are given, they bind to these sites and either stimulate the receptor sites and cause a reaction, or block the sites and prevent other chemicals from attaching. Thus, a medication can either increase or decrease a normal function of the body. A medication that causes stimulation of receptors is called an agonist. Medications that bind to a receptor and block other medications are called antagonists or blockers. The dose is the amount of the medication that is given. The dose depends on the patient's weight or age. Adults and children will receive different amounts of the same medication. The dose also depends on the desired action of the medication. The action is the therapeutic effect or intended effect that a medication is expected to have on the body. These factors, among others, can help to explain why one dose of medication works quickly and efficiently on one patient and the same dose has little effect on another patient. Doses of medications may need to be decreased for infants because they have small bodies. Doses may also need to be decreased for the elderly because they cannot process medications as efficiently as younger people. Indications are the reasons or conditions for which a particular medication is given. For example, nitroglycerin relaxes the walls of the blood vessels and may dilate the arteries. This increases the blood flow and the supply of oxygen to the heart muscle. In this way, nitroglycerin relieves the discomfort that can occur with the cardiac condition called angina. Therefore, nitroglycerin is indicated for chest pain associated with angina. There are times when you should not give a medication, even if it usually is indicated for that person's condition. Such situations are called contraindications. A medication is contraindicated when it would harm the patient or have no positive effect on the patient's condition. For example, the administration of activated charcoal is indicated when a patient has swallowed a poison. Generally, activated charcoal, premixed with water, is used to prevent the body from absorbing a poison. However, activated charcoal would be contraindicated if the patient were unconscious and could not swallow. Side effects are any actions of a medication other than the desired ones. There are 2 types of side effects, unintended effects and untoward effects. The reason that side effects are separated into 2 groups is because one group of side effects is simply bothersome and the other can be harmful. Unintended effects are the effects that are undesirable but pose little risk to the patient. Untoward effects are the effects that can be harmful to the patient. Consider diphenhydramine, Benadryl. People take this medication for allergic reactions, indication. The medication is supposed to block the effects of histamine, intended effect. It has side effects of drying the mouth and sleepiness, unintended, and can increase the pressure of the fluid within the eye, untoward. Patients are told to expect drowsiness after taking this medication. They are also warned that if they have glaucoma, an eye condition causing increased fluid pressures, they should avoid this medication. Diphenhydramine is contraindicated for patients who have glaucoma because of the increased fluid pressures in their eyes. Medication names. Medications usually have two types of names. The generic name, such as ibuprofen, is a simple, clear, non-proprietary name. The generic name is not capitalized. Sometimes a medication is called by its generic name more often than by any of its trade names. For example, you may hear the term nitroglycerin used more often than the trade names, Isodil and Nitrostat. All medications that are licensed for use in the United States are listed by their generic names in the United States Pharmacopeia. A trade name is the brand name that a manufacturer gives to a medication, such as Tylenol or Lasix. As a proper noun, a trade name begins with a capital letter. Trade names are used in every aspect of our daily lives, not just in medications. Well-known examples include Jell-O gelatin, Band-Aid adhesive bandages, and Hershey's chocolate candy. A medication may have many different trade names depending on how many companies manufacture it. Advil, Nuprin, and Motrin are all trade names for the generic medication ibuprofen. A trade name sometimes is also designated by a raised registered symbol, that is, Advil. Medications may be prescription medications or over-the-counter, OTC, medications. Prescription medications are distributed to patients only by pharmacists according to a physician's order. Medications that are OTC may be purchased directly, such as from a discount store or supermarket, without a prescription. In recent years, the number of prescription medications that have become available OTC has increased dramatically. You may come into contact with patients who have taken street drugs, such as heroin or cocaine. Other patients may take herbal medications, enhancement drugs, or vitamin supplements. As we have discussed, the body's cells are configured to operate using chemical reactions. They do not discern between safe and unsafe pharmacologic agents. Any medication that a patient takes can be pharmacologically active and can cause an effect. As an EMT, you need to ask patients about any medications they are taking. Routes of administration. Medications can be given by a wide array of routes. To simplify this topic, the routes of medication administration are divided into two categories, enteral and parenteral. Enteral medications enter the body through the digestive system. Typically, the form of the medication will be a pill or a liquid, such as cough medicine. Medications administered via this route tend to absorb slowly and are therefore not commonly used in an emergency setting. Parenteral medications enter the body by a route other than the digestive tract, the skin, or the mucous membranes. Parenteral medications are often in a liquid form and are generally administered using syringes and needles. These medications are absorbed much more quickly and offer a more predictable and measurable response. Regardless of the route of administration of a medication, the end goal is to get that medication into the bloodstream. Absorption is the process by which medications travel through body tissues until they reach the bloodstream. Often the rate at which a medication is absorbed into the bloodstream depends on its route of administration. Table 7.1 lists common routes of medication administration and rates of absorption. Per rectum, PR. Per rectum means by rectum. This route of delivery is most commonly used with children because of easier administration and more reliable absorption. Children often regurgitate some or all of a medication. For similar reasons, many medications that are used for nausea and vomiting come in a rectal suppository form. Some medications to control seizures are administered PR when it is impossible to administer them intravenously. The PR route also is used to give some medications when the patient cannot swallow or is unconscious. Oral. Many medications are taken by mouth or per os, PO, and enter the bloodstream through the digestive system. This process often takes as long as 1 hour. One of the advantages of using this route is it is non-invasive. Patients are often much happier to take a pill than to have a needle stuck in them. It is also less expensive to use enteral medications than to use parenteral. However, the main disadvantage of this administration route is the unpredictability of medication absorption. If the patient has an upset stomach or diarrhea, the amount of medication that is absorbed will be altered. Intravenous, IV, injection. Intravenous means into the vein. Medications that need to enter the bloodstream immediately may be injected directly into a vein. This is the fastest way to deliver a chemical substance, but the IV route cannot be used for all chemicals. For example, aspirin, oxygen, and charcoal cannot be given by the IV route. Intraosseous, IO. Intraosseous means into the bone. Medications that are given by this route reach the bloodstream through the bone marrow. Giving a medication by the IO route into the marrow requires drilling a needle into the outer layer of the bone. Because this is painful, the IO route is used most often in patients who are unconscious as a result of cardiac arrest or extreme shock. Most commonly, the IO route is used for children who have fewer available or difficult to access IV sites. Subcutaneous, SC, injection. Subcutaneous means beneath the skin. An SC injection is given into the tissue between the skin and the muscle. Because there is less blood here than in the muscles, medications that are given by this route are generally absorbed more slowly, and their effects last longer. An SC injection is a useful way to give medications that cannot be taken by mouth, as long as they do not irritate or damage the tissue. Daily insulin injections for patients with diabetes are given by the SC route. Some forms of epinephrine can be given by the SC route. Subcutaneous sometimes is abbreviated as SQ or sub-Q. Intramuscular, IM, injection. Intramuscular means into the muscle. Usually, medications that are administered by IM injection are absorbed quickly because muscles have a lot of blood vessels. However, not all medications can be administered by the IM route. Possible problems with IM injections are damage to muscle tissue and uneven, unreliable absorption, especially in people with decreased tissue perfusion or who are in shock. EMTs will typically use the IM route of medication administration with an auto-injector. These devices deliver a predetermined amount of medication into the patient when pressed firmly into the thigh. Examples of this delivery method would be the EpiPen auto-injector, which is used for allergic reactions, and the Mark I auto-injector, which is used for managing an exposure to certain chemicals. For more information on the EpiPen auto-injector, see Chapter 18, Immunologic Emergencies. For more information on the Mark I auto-injector, see Chapter 39, Disaster Management. Inhalation. Some medications are inhaled into the lungs so that they can be absorbed into the bloodstream more quickly. Others are inhaled because they work in the lungs. Generally, inhalation helps minimize the effects of the medication in other body tissues. Such medications come in the form of aerosols, fine powders, and sprays. Sublingual, SL. Sublingual means under the tongue. Medications given by the SL route, such as nitroglycerin tablets, enter through the oral mucosa under the tongue and are absorbed into the bloodstream within minutes. This route is faster than the oral route, and it protects medications from chemicals in the digestive system, such as acids that can weaken or inactivate them. Transcutaneous, transdermal. Transcutaneous means through the skin. Some medications can be absorbed transcutaneously, such as the nicotine in patches used by people who are trying to quit smoking. On occasion, a medication that also comes in another form is administered transcutaneously to achieve a longer-lasting effect. An example is an adhesive patch containing nitroglycerin. Intranasal, IN. Intranasal is a relatively new format for the delivery of medication. In this route, a medication is pushed through a specialized atomizer device called a mucosal atomizer device, MAD. The liquid medication is turned into a spray and is administered into a nostril. Blood flow to the head and face is very high. Therefore, absorption is rather quick with this route. Naloxone can be administered to some overdose patients via this route. Table 7.2 lists the words that are used for routes of medication delivery along with their meanings. Medication forms. The form of a medication usually dictates the route of administration. For example, a tablet or a spray cannot be given through a needle. The manufacturer chooses the form to ensure the proper route of administration, the timing of its release into the bloodstream, and its effects on the target organs or body systems. As an EMT, you should be familiar with the following 7 medication forms. Tablets and capsules. Most medications that are given by mouth to adult patients are in tablet or capsule form. Capsules are gelatin shells filled with powdered or liquid medication. If the capsule contains liquid, the shell is sealed and usually soft. If the capsule contains powder, the shell can usually be pulled apart. In tablets, the medication is compressed under high pressure. Tablets often contain other materials that are mixed with the medication. Some tablets are designed to dissolve very quickly in small amounts of liquid so that they can be given sublingually and absorbed rapidly. An example is the sublingual nitroglycerin tablet used to treat chest pain in patients with cardiac conditions. These medications are especially useful in emergency situations. Sublingual medications are generally placed under the tongue. Generally, a medication that must be swallowed is less useful in an emergency because the digestive tract provides a slower route of delivery. For example, an oral pain medication is less useful than an IV pain medication when pain relief is needed within minutes. Solutions and suspensions. A solution is a liquid mixture of one or more substances that cannot be separated by filtering or allowing the mixture to stand. Solutions can be given by almost any route. When given by mouth, solutions may be absorbed from the stomach fairly quickly because the medication is already dissolved. For example, you may need to help in the sublingual delivery of a nitroglycerin spray. Many solutions can be given as an IV, IM, or SC injection. If a patient has a severe allergic reaction, you may help to administer a solution of epinephrine using an auto-injector. Many substances do not dissolve well in liquids. Some of these can be ground into fine particles and evenly distributed throughout a liquid by shaking or stirring. This type of mixture is called a suspension. An example is activated charcoal, which you may give to patients who have taken overdoses of certain medications or ingested certain poisons. Suspensions separate if they stand or are filtered. It is very important that you shake or swirl a suspension before administering it to ensure that the patient receives the right amount of medication. For example, if you are a parent, you may have had to shake a suspension of oral antibiotic before giving it to your child. Suspensions usually are administered by mouth, but sometimes are given rectally. Occasionally, suspensions are applied directly to the skin to treat skin problems. You may have used calamine lotion in this way. Injectable suspensions are given via IM or SC injection only. Certain hormone shots or vaccinations are given this way because of the suspended particles. They cannot be given by IV injection because the suspended particles do not remain dissolved. Metered dose inhalers. If liquids or solids are broken into small enough droplets or particles, they can be inhaled. A metered dose inhaler, MDI, is a miniature spray canister used to direct such substances through the mouth and into the lungs. An MDI delivers the same amount of medication each time it is used. Because an inhaled medication usually is suspended in a propellant, the MDI must be shaken vigorously before the medication is administered. An MDI is often used by a patient with respiratory illnesses such as asthma or emphysema. See Chapter 13, Respiratory Emergencies, for more information on the MDI. Topical medications. Lotions, creams, and ointments are topical medications. That is, they are applied to the surface of the skin and affect only that area. Lotions contain the most water, and ointments contain the least. Lotions are absorbed the most rapidly, and ointments the most slowly. Calamine lotion is an example of a medical lotion. Hydrocortisone cream, to diminish skin itching, is an example of a medical cream that can also be given in ointment form. Neosporin is an example of a first aid ointment. Transcutaneous medications. Transdermal medications are designed to be absorbed through the skin, or transcutaneously. Medications such as nitroglycerin paste usually have properties or delivery systems that help to dilate the blood vessels in the skin and, thus, speed absorption into the bloodstream. In contrast with most topical medicines, which work directly on the application site, transdermal medications are usually intended for systemic, whole-body effects. A note of caution: if you touch such a medication with your bare skin while administering it, you will absorb it just as readily as the patient will. One of the newer delivery systems for transcutaneous medications is the adhesive patch. Patches attach to the skin and allow even absorption of a medication for many hours. Prescription and OTC medications come in this form. Common examples are nitroglycerin, nicotine, some pain medications, and some oral contraceptives. Gels. A gel is a semi-liquid substance that is administered orally in capsule form or through plastic tubes. Gels usually have the consistency of pastes or creams, but are transparent, clear. Gelatinous means thick and sticky, like gelatin. Depending on your local medical directives, as an EMT, you may give oral glucose in gel form to a patient with diabetes. Gases for inhalation. Gaseous medications are neither solid nor liquid and most often are given in an operating room. The medication most commonly used in gas form outside the operating room is oxygen. You might not think of oxygen as a medication because it is all around us and we all use it. However, in its concentrated form, it is a potent medication that has systemic effects, that is, effects throughout the body. You will deliver this gas, usually through a non-rebreathing mask or a nasal cannula. General steps in administering medication. As an EMT, you may only administer medications for which you have an order from medical control. After the order has been confirmed, you must be familiar with the 6 general steps of administering any medication to a patient. These steps are the 6 rites of medication administration. After the medication has been administered, you will need to reassess the patient to see if it worked. You should look for side effects and then be prepared to document your actions and your findings. When administering or assisting with the administration of patient medications, the EMT must have an order from medical control to do so. This order may be given to you directly through online medical control, via telephone or radio. If you are receiving orders for the administration of a medication, it is important that you repeat the order back to the physician. This is referred to as the echo technique, and it is done to ensure that you heard the order correctly. The following example illustrates the correct way to acknowledge orders for medications. EMT Johnson is talking on the radio to medical control. She has already given the physician all of the patient assessment information and vital signs. She now asks, "Do you have any orders?" Dr. Ortez says, "Yes. Please assist the patient with 1 nitroglycerin tab. make sure that tablet goes under the patient's tongue. After 3 minutes, contact me again for more orders. EMT Johnson should reply, Dr. Ortez, I copy one nitroglycerin tablet administered under the tongue. I will contact you in 3 minutes for additional orders. Dr. Ortez says, that is correct. ABC Hospital, clear. If at any point while you are receiving an order for a medication, you are confused or unclear about what to do, you should tell medical control. It is very important that you understand what the physician wants you to do. With all of the noise in the back of an ambulance, the possible radio cell phone disruptions, or simply the stress of caring for a very ill patient, it is important to err on the cautious side. If you are not sure what to do, tell the doctor you were unclear on the order and ask for the order to be repeated. The other way to receive orders to administer or assist with medications is through indirect or offline medical control. Protocols are documents that contain standing orders for the administration of certain medications. For example, your system may use a protocol that describes how the medical director wants you to deal with a patient who is having respiratory difficulties. Part of this protocol may direct you to use a non-rebreathing mask to deliver oxygen at 15 liters per minute. You may do this without calling online medical control if the patient meets the criteria of the protocol. 1. Right patient. For EMS, this safety check may seem unneeded if there is only one patient in the back of an ambulance. In that case, it will be rather obvious who is to be administered the medication. However, there will be times when you will be working with more than one patient, and you will need to ensure that the patient who needs the medication is the person who receives the medication. 2. Right medication. Verify the proper medication and prescription. Once received, confirm the medication order and determine that the patient is still a candidate for the medication. Confirm again that the medication you are about to give is the correct medication. Carefully read the label. If it is the patient's own prescription, the bottle may show the trade name or the generic name. If you have any questions, contact online medical control. Make sure that the medication is the patient's own and does not belong to a friend or relative. You should never give a medication to a patient that has been prescribed for someone else. 3. Right dose. Verify the form and dose of the medication. You have confirmed your order and verified that the medication is the correct one to give. Now you must make sure that the form of the medication and the dose are correct. This is where it is important to pay very close attention to detail. If you are ordered to give 1,000 milligrams of acetaminophen, you will need to read the bottle to determine how many milligrams are in each tablet. If acetaminophen is available in 500 milligram tablets, how many will you need to give the patient? 4. Right route. Verify the route of the medication. Now you must make sure the route matches the order you received. For example, suppose you are told to give the patient a sublingual nitroglycerin tablet. The patient's nitroglycerin tablet bottle is empty, but he has another bottle of nitroglycerin capsules. These are to be swallowed 4 times a day. The medication is the same, even the dose may be the same, but the route of delivery is different from the order given. You may not substitute the capsules for the tablets without specific orders from medical control. 5. Right time. Check the expiration date and condition of the medication. The last step before administering a medication is to make sure the expiration date has not passed. Prescription and OTC medications alike should have an expiration date on their labels. Check the date. If no date can be found, you should examine the medication with suspicion. In addition, if you find discoloration, cloudiness, or particles in a liquid medication, you should not use it. If a patient with asthma gives you an MDI and the expiration date on it is smudged, you should not use it. After the medication is administered, you will need to reassess the patient to see if it has worked. Does the patient still have the same complaint as before you administered the medication? Has it changed? Has the medication seemed to have made a difference? Depending on the medication and the route of administration, it may take seconds or hours for the medication to take effect. You should reassess the vital signs, especially heart rate and blood pressure, at least every 5 minutes or sooner if the patient's condition changes. 6. Write documentation. Remember the EMS rule. The work is not done until the paperwork is done. Once the medication has been given, you must document your actions and the patient's response. This includes the time you gave the medication and the name, dose, and route of administration. Did the patient's condition improve, worsen, or not change? Were there any side effects? A second EMS rule says, if you did not write it down, it did not happen. If your performance should ever be questioned, documentation is your best defense. Medication administration and the EMT. There are several medications that may be carried on the EMS unit, including oxygen, oral glucose, activated charcoal, aspirin, and epinephrine. When used wisely, each can be a powerful tool. Keep in mind, however, that you may give these medications only according to standing orders in a protocol, offline medical control, or a direct order, online medical control. Along with several different medications that can be given by EMTs, there are several different routes of administration that will be used to deliver these medications to the patient. Before specific medications are discussed, the circumstances surrounding the administration of the medications need to be discussed. Over the years, EMTs have been allowed increasing responsibility to work with medications, but this growth has come with some degree of confusion and worry. Many departments throughout the United States have strict controls on when an EMT is allowed to administer a medication. The circumstances are peer-assisted medication, patient-assisted medication, EMT-administered medication. In peer-assisted medication administration, you are administering medication to yourself or your partner. It may be necessary for the EMS crew to receive medications because they were exposed to a toxic agent. In this case, you would first treat yourself and then your partner. Typically, the types of medications would be found in an auto-injector format. In patient-assisted medication administration, you are assisting the patient with the administration of his or her own medication. In the case of nitroglycerin, EMTs will often work with the patient to help them take their own medication. Medications where the EMT commonly assists the patient are the EpiPen auto-injector, which is used for allergic reactions, an MDI bronchodilator that is often used for asthma, or nitroglycerin to relieve the pain of angina. Perhaps the patient cannot find their medication. Maybe the patient is so upset that he or she cannot open the pill bottle or hold the MDI steady. In this circumstance, the patient is trying to administer the medication, but the EMT needs to offer some help so the task can be completed. The last circumstance is EMT-administered medications. Here, the EMT is directly administering the medication to the patient. It can certainly be difficult to find the exact point where assisting a patient ends and actually administering a medication begins. The patient may be severely confused or unable to understand the need for the medication. Common medications that the EMT administers in this circumstance are oxygen, oral glucose, activated charcoal, and aspirin. It is important for you to understand that the medication itself does not necessarily dictate whether or not you will be assisting or actually administering. Medical control, state guidelines, and local protocols will be the determining factors that define the role of the EMT. The EpiPen has often been an example of a medication that is both patient-assisted and EMT-administered. Refer to your local standards to obtain a listing of how and when EMTs can administer medications. Medications used by EMTs. The following is a discussion of medications that may be administered by EMTs. Again, your state, department, and medical director will ultimately define what medications are carried on your ambulance. Table 7-4 provides an excellent overview of these medications and their actions, indications, contraindications, routes of administration, side effects, interactions, and doses. The 2009 National EMS Education Standards recognize that some regions of the country may need their EMTs involved in the administration of additional medications, aside from oxygen, oral glucose, activated charcoal, aspirin, and epinephrine. The exact list of medications that each EMT will be allowed to manage is controlled ultimately by the state and medical director of the ambulance. Acetaminophen, ibuprofen, and diphenhydramine are three common medications that are used daily by millions of Americans. These medications have been deemed by the Food and Drug Administration to be safe for consumer use without medical supervision. When patients are suffering from minor pain, fevers, or allergic reactions, these medications can make the patient feel better. Oral medications. There are several medications EMTs may be asked to administer or to assist with administration. Activated charcoal, oral glucose, aspirin, and several over-the-counter medications can be administered by this route. As discussed, the advantages of this route are its ease of access and comfort level for the patient. One of the disadvantages of administering medications orally is that the digestive tract can be easily affected by foods, stress, and illness. The speed of movement of food through the tract dramatically changes the speed of absorption. This is considered a serious limitation. As with all medications, the EMT needs to start with the six rights. Follow these steps to perform oral medication administration. Skill Drill 7-1. 1. Take standard precautions. 2. If using a liquid, pour the desired amount into a calibrated cup. 3. Instruct the patient to swallow the medication, if a liquid, or chew, if a solid and it is appropriate. Provide water if administering a solid. 4. Monitor the patient's condition and document. Activated charcoal. Many poisoning emergencies involve overdoses of medications taken by mouth. Many medications bind with activated charcoal, keeping the medications from being absorbed by the body. Adsorption means to bind to or stick to a surface, while absorption is the process by which medications travel through body tissues until they reach the bloodstream. Activated charcoal is ground into a very fine powder to provide the greatest possible surface area for binding. You will probably carry a container with a pre-mixed suspension of activated charcoal powder and water in the EMS unit, if allowed by local protocol. The usual dose is 1 to 2 grams per kilogram of body weight. The bond between medication and charcoal is not permanent. Because the medication may break free and be absorbed into the bloodstream if activated charcoal remains in the digestive system throughout a normal day, charcoal is frequently suspended with another medication called sorbitol, a complex sugar. This suspension has a laxative effect that causes the entire mixture, including the medication, to move quickly through the digestive system. Activated charcoal is given by mouth. Although sorbitol sweetens the suspension, the black charcoal makes it look unappealing. For this reason, you should use a covered container and ask the patient to drink the fluid through a straw. Also, it is important to have a layer of protective clothing, such as a gown, over your EMT uniform. Activated charcoal is very staining to clothing, so protect yourself and the patient's clothes when administering it. This medication should not be given to anyone with an altered level of consciousness because of the risk of aspiration. Activated charcoal is not indicated for patients who have ingested an acid, an alkali, or a petroleum product. Oral glucose. Glucose is a sugar that our cells use as fuel. Although some cells can use other sugars, brain cells must have glucose. If the level of glucose in the blood gets too low, a person can lose consciousness, have seizures, and ultimately die. The medical term for an extremely low blood glucose level is hypoglycemia. Hypoglycemia can be caused by an excess of insulin, which is taken to control blood glucose levels. Patients with diabetes who use insulin regularly understand the effects of this medication on the body. The oral glucose that is carried in the EMS unit can counteract the effects of hypoglycemia in the same way as a candy bar or sweet drink, but faster. This is because common table sugar, sucrose, and fruit sugars, fructose, are complex sugars and must be broken down before they can be absorbed. Glucose is a simple sugar that is readily absorbed by the bloodstream. As an EMT, you can give glucose only by mouth. Hospital personnel and advanced providers, AEMTs, and paramedics can give glucose through an IV line. Glucose is available as a gel designed to be spread on the mucous membranes between the cheek and gum. However, absorption through this route is not as quick as with injection. Because the patient may be conscious one moment and unconscious the next, you must be very careful when administering oral glucose. Never administer oral medications to an unconscious patient or to one who is unable to swallow or protect the airway. See Chapter 17, Endocrine and Hematologic Emergencies, for more information on the administration of oral glucose. Aspirin. Aspirin, acetylsalicylic acid, or ASA, is an antipyretic, reduces fever, analgesic, reduces pain, and anti-inflammatory, reduces inflammation, and inhibits platelet aggregation, clumping. This last property makes it one of the most used medications today, because research has shown that platelets aggregating under certain conditions in the coronary arteries is one of the direct causes of heart attack. Patients at risk for coronary artery disease are often prescribed one or two baby or children's aspirins a day. During a potential heart attack, aspirin may be life-saving. Contraindications for aspirin include documented hypersensitivity to aspirin, pre-existent liver damage, bleeding disorders, and asthma. Because of the association of aspirin with Reye syndrome, a rare but serious condition that causes swelling in the brain and liver, it should not be given to children during episodes of fever-causing illnesses. Sublingual medications. The sublingual route of administration has many advantages. Assuming the patient is awake and alert and able to follow commands, it is easy to talk with the patient and advise them to place a pill under his or her tongue. The head and face receive large amounts of blood flow, so absorption rates are relatively quick. Be aware, however, that any medication placed in the mouth requires constant evaluation of the airway. You must also be alert to any signs of choking on the pill. If the patient is uncooperative or unconscious, this route of medication administration should not be used. Nitroglycerin. Many patients with cardiac conditions carry some form of fast-acting nitroglycerin to relieve the pain of angina. Nitroglycerin has been used medically since the 1800s. Nitroglycerin is typically the only medication that EMTs will help to administer sublingually. See Chapter 14, Cardiovascular Emergencies, for more information on how to administer nitroglycerin. If you have ever run for a prolonged period, you probably remember your muscles developed a painful, heavy burning sensation. This is because the demand for oxygen by the muscles exceeded the supply. When heart muscle develops a similar pain, it is called angina pectoris. The cause is the same, not enough oxygen. In this case, because of a blockage or narrowing in the blood vessels that supply the heart. Occasionally, the cause is a spasm in these blood vessels. Unlike the runner with sore legs, of course, the heart muscle cannot stop and rest until the pain goes away. The purpose of nitroglycerin is to increase blood flow by relieving the spasms or causing the arteries to dilate. It does this by relaxing the muscular walls of the coronary arteries and veins. Nitroglycerin also relaxes veins throughout the body, so less blood is returned to the heart, and the heart does not have to work as hard each time it contracts. In short, blood pressure is decreased. Because of this, however, it is important that you always take the patient's blood pressure before administering nitroglycerin. If the systolic blood pressure is less than 100 millimeters of mercury, the nitroglycerin may have the harmful effect of lowering the blood flow to the heart's own blood vessels. Even a patient who has adequate blood pressure should sit or lie down with the head elevated before taking this medication. If the patient is standing, he or she may faint when blood flow to the brain is reduced as the nitroglycerin starts to work. If a significant drop in the patient's blood pressure, 15 to 20 millimeters of mercury, occurs, and the patient suddenly feels dizzy or sick, lay the patient down and raise the legs. During a heart attack, myocardial infarction, or MI, a blood clot forms in a narrowed coronary artery. This blocks the blood flow to a section of the heart muscle. If the blockage is not cleared in time, that section of the heart muscle beyond the clot will die. If nitroglycerin no longer brings relief to a person in whom it has previously worked, the person may be experiencing an MI instead of an angina attack. Therefore, it is important to know how much nitroglycerin a patient has needed in the past to relieve chest pain and how much has been taken during the current emergency, including the use of nitroglycerin patches. Always report this information to medical control. Remember, you cannot administer this medication without clearance from medical control or standing orders. There are important interactions to consider when administering nitroglycerin. The medication sildenafil, Viagra, can have potentially fatal interactions with nitroglycerin. When taken together, nitroglycerin and sildenafil can cause dramatic drops in blood pressure. Any medication that is similar to sildenafil can have the same effect. Ask a patient who has been prescribed nitroglycerin if they have used sildenafil, Viagra, tadalafil, Cialis, vardenafil, Levitra, or any other medication that is used for the treatment of erectile dysfunction within the previous 24 hours. If he or she has, do not administer the nitroglycerin and report this to medical control. Nitroglycerin has the following effects. Relaxes the muscular walls of coronary arteries and veins. Results in less blood returning to the heart. Decreases blood pressure. Relaxes arteries throughout the body. Often causes a mild headache after administration. Administering nitroglycerin by tablet. Nitroglycerin is usually taken sublingually. The patient places a tiny tablet under the tongue where it dissolves. The tablet should create a slight tingling or burning sensation. If the nitroglycerin has lost its usual bite, it may have lost potency because of aging or improper storage. Be sure to check the expiration date on the bottle. Sublingual nitroglycerin tablets should be stored in their original glass container with the cap screwed on tightly. Note that what looks like cotton in the container is actually rayon. If real cotton is placed in the container, it can absorb nitroglycerin, thus reducing the potency of the tablets. Other medications placed in the container can likewise rob nitroglycerin of its power. Exposure to light, heat, or air may degrade the strength of the medication as well. If you notice any signs of improper storage, be sure to include that information in the patient's medical history. Administering nitroglycerin by metered dose spray. Some patients who take nitroglycerin use a metered dose spray, which deposits medication on or under the tongue. Each spray is equivalent to one tablet. To ensure direct, proper dosing on the bottom of the tongue, do not use a spacer with the metered dose canister when giving nitroglycerin by this method. Whether using the tablets or the metered dose spray, you should wait 5 minutes for a response before repeating the dose. Closely monitor the patient's vital signs, particularly the blood pressure. Give repeated doses per medical control and/or local protocol. Remember always to wear gloves when handling nitroglycerin tablets or spray. This medication can be absorbed by your skin. Next, you must reconfirm that the patient can tolerate the medication. For example, suppose you have received and verified the order to give one sublingual nitroglycerin tablet to a patient with a cardiac condition. While you were getting the order, however, the patient begins to sweat more and become less responsive. Reassessment of the blood pressure reveals a pressure of 80/60 millimeters of mercury. Using your knowledge about nitroglycerin, you decide not to give the medication. Instead, you notify medical control of the changes in the patient's condition and seek further orders. Lastly, if the patient is having chest pain, just like my other heart attack, you may be able to apply oxygen, but you may have to call medical control or follow standing orders before helping to administer the patient's nitroglycerin spray. Knowing and understanding the local protocols under which you will be working are absolutely essential. Refer back to Table 7-4 for a review of all of the medications and the important information needed for their administration. Intramuscular medications. The intramuscular IM route of administration provides quick and easy access to the circulatory system without the need for placing a needle within a vein. Blood flow to the muscles is relatively stable even during circumstances of severe illness or injury. This advantage makes the IM route an efficient means to deliver some medications. A major disadvantage for this route is the use of a needle and the subsequent pain that it can cause. Patients may be reluctant to use the needle for fear of pain or injury. With proper technique, the EMT can administer medications via the IM route and limit the amount of pain delivered to the patient. See Chapter 18, Immunologic Emergencies, for more information on the administration of epinephrine using an auto-injector. Epinephrine. Epinephrine is the main hormone that controls the body's fight-or-flight response and is the primary medication that EMTs will be administering IM. Epinephrine is a sympathomimetic. A sympathomimetic mimics the effect of the sympathetic nervous system. The body releases epinephrine when there is sudden stress, such as during exercise or when the patient is suddenly scared. Because epinephrine is secreted by the adrenal glands, it is also known as adrenaline. Epinephrine has different effects on different body tissues and is used as a medication in several forms. Generally, epinephrine will increase the heart rate and blood pressure and dilate passages in the lungs. Therefore, it can ease breathing problems caused by the bronchial spasms that are common in asthma and allergic reactions. In a person who is close to anaphylactic shock as a result of an allergic reaction, epinephrine may also help to maintain the patient's blood pressure. This medication should not be given to patients with hypertension, hypothermia, or if you believe the patient may be having a myocardial infarction. Patients who are not wheezing or who have no signs of respiratory compromise or hypotension should not be given epinephrine. Epinephrine has the following characteristics: secreted naturally by the adrenal glands, dilates passages in the lungs, constricts blood vessels causing increased blood pressure, increases heart rate and blood pressure. Refer back to Chapter 5, The Human Body, for more information on epinephrine. Administering epinephrine by injection. Some states and EMS services now authorize the use of epinephrine by EMTs for the treatment of life-threatening anaphylaxis. In certain individuals, insect venom or other allergens cause the body to release histamine, which lowers blood pressure by relaxing the small blood vessels and allowing them to leak. The release of histamine may also cause wheezing from bronchial spasms and swelling of the airway tissues, edema, which makes it difficult for the patient to breathe. Epinephrine acts as a specific antidote to histamine, countering both of these harmful effects. It constricts the blood vessels, allowing blood pressure to rise and reducing the swelling. In the lungs, it has the opposite effect. It dilates the air passages, so the flow of air is less restricted. You can also expect the patient's heart rate to increase after administration of epinephrine. Epinephrine may be dispensed from an auto-injector, which automatically delivers a preset amount of the medication. This is usually 0.3 milligrams of epinephrine. This is the method that you will most likely use. Be sure to familiarize yourself with the procedures for using the auto-injector on your unit. The general procedure is as follows. 1. Grasp unit with the tip pointing downward. 2. Form a fist around the unit. 3. With the other hand, pull off the activation cap. 4. hold the tip near the outer part of the patient's thigh. 5. Swing and jab firmly into the outer thigh so that the unit is perpendicular at a 90-degree angle to the thigh. Do not allow it to bounce. 6. Hold firmly in the thigh for several seconds. Epinephrine causes a burning sensation where it is injected, and the patient's heart rate will increase after the injection, so be prepared for these side effects. As discussed, it is not the medication, but the other factors that will determine if a medication can be administered or patient-assisted. You have already read the general information on epinephrine and its use by EMTs for anaphylaxis. Some services do not permit EMTs to carry epinephrine, but do allow them to assist patients in administering their own epinephrine in life-threatening anaphylactic reactions. In addition, EMTs frequently may assist patients in administering epinephrine through their own MDIs for bronchospasm. Inhalation medications. Oxygen. All cells need oxygen to function properly. The heart and brain, especially, cannot function for long if oxygen levels decrease, which is why oxygen is an onboard medication for EMS units. If a patient is not breathing or is having trouble getting air into the lungs, you should administer supplemental oxygen. In general, you will be giving oxygen via a non-rebreathing mask at 10 to 15 liters per minute or via nasal cannula at 2 to 6 liters per minute if the patient cannot tolerate a non-rebreathing mask. However, if the patient is not breathing, you must also provide artificial ventilations, so you will need to use a bag mask device. Oxygen is usually delivered at 15 liters per minute with this technique. Outside a hospital, the non-rebreathing mask is the preferred method of giving oxygen to patients who are experiencing significant respiratory difficulties or shock. With a good mask-to-mouth seal, this mask can provide up to 90% inspired oxygen. With the nasal cannula, oxygen flows through two small tube-like prongs that fit into the patient's nostrils. This device can provide up to 44% inspired oxygen if the flow meter is set at 6 liters per minute. Remember that although oxygen itself does not burn, it allows other things to burn. If there is extra oxygen in the air, objects will burn more easily, so make sure there are no open flames, lit cigarettes, or sparks in the area in which you are administering oxygen. Metered dose inhalers and nebulizers. MDIs and nebulizers are used to administer liquid medications that have been turned into a fine mist by a flow of air or oxygen. With the medication atomized, it is breathed into the lungs and delivered to the alveoli. Blood flow to the alveoli is very high, and absorption rates are very close to those found with IV medications. This route is fast and relatively easy to access. MDIs are commonly used because of their convenience and portability. The major disadvantage of an MDI is that the patient needs to be cooperative and control his or her breathing. If the patient is unconscious, an MDI cannot be used, although an EMT could use a nebulizer. Nebulizers are often used for more severe problems. Medications administered using a metered dose inhaler. Sometimes a respiratory condition such as asthma is not severe enough to require the use of epinephrine. In such cases, patients may use one of the epinephrine cousins that are more narrowly focused on the lungs. These medications are delivered with an MDI. An MDI requires a great deal of coordination, something that may be difficult to achieve when a person is having trouble breathing. Patients must aim properly and spray just as they start to inhale. However, most of the medication tends to end up on the roof of the patient's mouth. An adapter, called a spacer, which fits over the inhaler like a sleeve, can be used to avoid misdirecting the spray. The inhaler fits into an opening on one end of the spacer's chamber, and the mouthpiece fits on the other end. The patient sprays the prescribed dose into the chamber and then breathes in and out of the mouthpiece until the mist is completely inhaled. You can activate the spray by pressing the canister into the adapter just as the patient starts to inhale. If relief is not achieved, wait about 3 to 5 minutes and repeat this sequence according to the patient's prescription. Above all, it is important to ensure that the patient inhales all the medication in a single sprayed dose. See Chapter 13, Respiratory Emergencies, for more information on using an MDI. Asthma, also known as reactive airway disease, can be a life-threatening condition. Therefore, some patients use epinephrine inhalers to relieve bronchial spasms quickly. The trade names of some of these inhalers are Primatene Mist, Bronitin Mist, Bronchaid Mist, and Medihaler Epi. Because epinephrine tends to increase the heart rate and blood pressure, most patients with asthma use certain chemical cousins of epinephrine that produce fewer side effects. Metoproterenol, Allopent or Metapril, and albuterol, Proventil or Ventolin, are beta-2 agonists. A beta-2 agonist acts more specifically than epinephrine on the bronchi of the lungs, causing dilation with a lesser effect on the heart, beta-1 agonist. Give repeated doses per medical control and or local protocol. One of the most important factors you should be aware of when using the patient's MDI is that many patients are prescribed many types of MDIs. Patients with asthma or COPD may be using MDIs that are corticosteroids, others that are mucolytics, and still others that are cell stabilizers. There are at least 20 different MDIs on the market, and often patients may be prescribed 3 to 6 different individual medications. The only medication that will be effective during an acute attack of shortness of breath will be short-action bronchodilators. Albuterol, Proventil, or Ventolin remains a popular, effective short-action bronchodilator. Be sure that you know the right drug. Read the label of the MDI before you use or assist the patient in using it. If you are administering a medication using a nebulizer, you will know which bronchodilator is being administered because you will select it out of the medication bag. The most common bronchodilators are either albuterol or metoproterenol. The process involves placing the medication into a nebulizer and then running a flow of oxygen through the device, which will atomize the liquid and allow the patient to breathe in the medication. Patient medications. Part of your patient assessment includes finding out what medications your patient is currently taking. This information may provide vital clues to your patient's condition that may help guide your treatment or be extremely useful to the emergency department physician. Often, knowing what medications a patient takes may be the only way you can determine what chronic or underlying conditions your patient may have, such as when a patient is unable to relate his medical history to you. The patient may be unresponsive, confused, not knowledgeable of his or her medical history, uncooperative, or unable to communicate. Discovering what the patient takes and transporting the medications or a list of them with you to the emergency department can be crucial in assessing your patient's needs. In addition to prescription medications, patients often take non-prescription OTC medications and herbal medications. Many times, they do not consider these substances medications and will not report them to you unless you ask about them specifically. Yet, they may be as potent as prescription medications and can have interactions and effects on the patient's health and condition that are just as important. Be sure to ask specifically about these also. Table 7.5 lists the top 20 prescribed medications and their uses. Patients are naturally reluctant to tell you about any illegal drugs or medications they may have taken. It is important to ask, and you can assure them that your only interest in asking is to be able to treat them appropriately.